Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, today's show is mostly about propaganda and suppression of alternative news viewpoints. Not something incredibly new to this channel, but not simply that it exists, as I truly hope those of you watching are aware of its existence in general, and how it's used to manufacture consent for war, spread fear, and promote division among the people. And not to point out, as I have many times before, that the NDA allows the U.S. government the legal authority to use propaganda against you by creating false news stories and false events in the name of national security, of course. Now, today's show is about propaganda in the sense that every story I have carefully picked out for us to discuss is a stark example of just how severe and all-consuming it has become, and the suppression around it, and the lengths to which they are going to control the narrative, and how the mainstream outlets, government, and its ruling oligarchy alike are currently pulling out all their stops in an effort to keep you looking at what they want you to see, and only what they want you to see, while doing all they can to convince you that they are working for you and for humanity, and not for themselves, and their long-sought agenda for dominance, power, and manufactured subservience. So the first story of the day, and one that I find very important, especially with all the recent news we've been discussing coming from Mint Press News, entitled Saudis Intensify Hodeida Offensive, as clamor rises for U.S. to stop supplying weapons. Excuse me. Now, this is a very important story. We recently have been talking about the idea of you know, why the mainstream media all of a sudden began discussing Yemen after 3 years of the independent media and many others screaming for people to pay attention to the genocide being carried out in Yemen, and as they willfully and intentionally ignored it and all of a sudden covered it. Now, I made the point clearly because that's your success as the average individuals, as the independent media, making them cover this story. Now, as a perfect counterpoint to that and what's going on today, and an example of how they're simply not doing this for any kind of altruistic measure, it is continuing to intensify, getting even worse, and today you will not find this on any mainstream channel. Any of the channels that are touting themselves as world international news organizations, because they're not being forced to cover it. Not yet, that is. So more than 15 Yemeni fishermen lost their lives and several others sustained injuries in Hodeida, western Yemen, on Sunday when U.S.-Saudi airstrikes targeted their fishing boats off the Sawabi Islands and Qadaha south of the city. The head of General Authority for the Marine Fisheries in the Red Sea told Mint Press News, excuse me, an iron boat owned by Ahmad bin Ahmad Haishah, a civilian based in Hodeida, who has a number of boats, was targeted by warships after it left Al-Qadha district in Qadaha, killing 12 fishermen. There are no survivors. Also, two Saudi warplanes, two U.S.-backed Saudi warplanes, struck a boat bearing the number 11210 near the Al-Magdaw Dahar Island, killing 4 fishermen and injuring 6. The boat belongs to 40-year-old Yahai Muhammad Al-Dahal. I'm sorry for mispronouncing their names. Just want to make sure I use their names because it's important to realize that these are people, civilians, being killed for no reason. He was a father to 7 who lives in the city of Hodeida. 4 fishermen remained unaccounted for to this point. Since 2015, when the U.S.-Saudi-led coalition military campaign against Yemen began, 217 fishermen have been killed, 204 wounded, and 4 others missing, according to the General Authority for Marine Fisheries in its press conference held today in Hodeida. The General Authority for Marine Fisheries said that the coalition attacks have destroyed 205 fishing boats and 70 operations launched during the past 3 years. Now, these are civilians, not military operations, civilian fishing boats. The ministry added that more than $5.5 billion is the total loss of the fish sector in the Red Sea through the end of last July. Now, money is an obvious factor, but realize that this means the food necessary for them to survive, which is why the very clear effort to create the mass famine we're seeing, as the UN thinks that around 20 million people could starve by the end of the year. These attacks come amid the escalation of the attack against Hodeida, as the coalition, the U.S.-backed coalition, mounted a new offensive in Dirihami, southern Hodeida, 4 days after laying a siege to the heavily populated area. According to 50-year-old Ali Kasim Aldrihami, in a phone call with Ment Press News, quote, "We are trapped in our houses. We cannot move anywhere. The city is being constantly targeted by airstrikes, rocket attacks, and artillery without discrimination. There are some people who have been bled to death in the streets, and no one dared to help them because of airstrikes that target passerbys, paramedics, and fleeing civilians on purpose. Some corpses have decayed." Excuse me. Meanwhile, UAE Apache helicopters, attack helicopters, conducted aerial attacks on government buildings, homes, farms, shops, mosques, and health centers in the city, without safe corridors for civilians to flee. A mother of three children sent a message via SMS message to her brother in Sana'a stating, "We live in a state of terror," during Tuesday. "Her children are terrified. Somebody help us." This is horrifying to realize, and again, not being reported, despite all of the pleas for what's going on in Yemen the few past days. The Ministry of Public Health and Population said in a statement, quote, "Dozens were killed and wounded, mostly children, women, and the elderly. The coalition has also imposed a land and air siege on the city. It has been preventing the citizens' cars and ambulances from transferring the wounded to Hodeida's hospitals, increasing the amount of death around these civilian casualties. While local authorities and humanitarian organizations are trying to cope with a severe shortage of food and medicines due to the U.S.-Saudi siege, the attacks have also crippled internet coverage across the region, making it almost impossible for residents to contact the outside world. Seems highly intentional to me." Now, of course, we've talked about these recent events. We covered this story about the sad story of 50 children being killed in a school bus well before it was being covered by any mainstream outlet. A lot of independent media were actively covering this while being called fake news. We also covered the story about the Hodeida port, where 60 civilians died, also being called fake news while this story was coming out. And we now know this is very clearly happening, not just because the mainstream media talks about it, but because it is happening. And we have evidence, we have documentation. They've simply been ignoring it, and now continuing to ignore it today, despite their disingenuous pleas to act like they were covering this story the last few days. So Yemeni scholars and tribes, after all of this, are calling on all freedom-loving people worldwide, leaders, activists, and clerics, to raise their voices and fulfill their humanitarian and religious duties in the face of this U.S.-backed, Saudi-led coalition's criminal acts against civilians in Yemen. And again, a second apology if I mispronounce any of their names. I truly find it important to actually say their names, so we do not have this faceless idea of people being murdered for these horrible agendas, with your tax dollars, by the way, if you are an American. I also find it interesting to finish this first story to realize how the U.S. seemingly is willing to just disregard deals and agreements all over the world, and different agreements they come to, international agreements, and just kind of casually dismiss them and move forward when it suits their political agenda. But when it's an ally like we're seeing here and civilians are suffering, that doesn't even seem to be an option. Even with the mainstream media calling out what they've been doing, I find it hard to believe that the U.S. will cease its funding and support of the Saudi extremist opposition against Yemen. But we can hold out hope. The ultimate point of this first story is to really highlight the fact that this is not just over. This was not a limited hangout like they want you to think it was. Oh, this one story was bad and we're paying attention and now forget about it. No. We're not going to forget about it. The story has not ended. Yemen is still dramatically suffering, and in fact, the U.S.-backed coalition attacks on Yemen are increasing as they continue to give the Saudi coalition weapons and support and on-the-ground efforts. So continue to speak out about this and force them to cover it yet again. Moving on to the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com, a very interesting story in light of what's been talked about in regard to Facebook and a couple of other things in that we've talked about a lot in the past, and this is a very alarming story because it's been kept secret up until now, entitled "Facebook's Secret User Reputation Score Exposed." Very scary story when you really find out what this is all about. Now, in a very alarming situation with ominous similarities to China's already prevalent social credit system, which is a rating assigned to each citizen based on government data regarding their economic and social status. Facebook has begun to assign its users a reputation score, predicting their trustworthiness on a scale from 0 to 1. This is something that James Corbett has warned about at least as far back as 2015, if not further, especially in regard to China, talking about Sesame Credit, as he calls it, the creepy new social engineering experiment, which is a very alarming thing when you realize what this is really accomplishing. And now we're finding out that this is happening on Facebook. And that should scare us. Under the guise of its efforts to combat fake news, of course, according to Washington Post, citing an interview with Tessa Lyons, the product manager who is in charge of fighting misinformation, the rating system that has already been long in effect and used on an unwitting public, yet is only just now being admitted to, has evolved to include measuring the credibility of users to help identify malicious actors. Now, I should not have to point out that this is based on their interpretations of what's true and false. The fact checkers that we've already pointed out, like AP and Snopes, the groups they recognizably use, I should say, or even the government-associated groups like the Atlantic Council, which are connected to NATO, which is a government group with actual outside foreign funding, by the way. Funny how they're trying to counter foreign interference while using a foreign-funded company, but that's aside the point. The reality is they're choosing what they think is false or not and now beginning to grade us based on that subjective interpretation. Now, that's not to say that truth is subjective, but rather what they perceive to be truth to their agenda, which we've already proven is subjective, and how they will censor things based on opinions, not based on the facts at hand, which is widely regarded today and happening all over the place. Now, it says one of the signals they use is how people interact with articles, according to Lyons. She says, quote, for example, if someone previously gave us feedback on an article that was the feedback that the article was false, and the article was confirmed false by a fact checker, again, see how that plays in. It's all rooted back on their own opinion of everything. When we might weight that person's future false news feedback more than someone who indiscriminately provides false news feedback on lots of articles, including ones that end up being rated as true. So again, saying if we think something's true and you rate it false, that's a knock. If you think something's false and it turned out to be true, that's a knock based on their opinions. And again, to think just because they have fact checkers and people that have been proven many times in the past to have subjective opinions and biases in regard to what they think is true and false, and that somehow is the arbiter of the truth, is a very dangerous step forward, especially with something as big as this kind of a company. But how these new credibility systems work is actually highly opaque. Says, quote, not knowing how Facebook is judging us is what makes us uncomfortable, according to Clara Ward, director of the First Draft Research Lab within Harvard Kennedy School. She says, quote, but the irony is that they can't tell us how they're judging us, because if they do, the algorithms will be able to be gamed, apparently. Which is interesting now, okay, that we don't get to know then. So we'll never really know how they're really judging us and using that to influence our ability to reach people on a social network. Very interesting. This all sounds ominously like the Orwellian China social credit system, which in addition to blocking the flights and trains, as the Global Times noted, that the names of those with low social credit scores had been shamed on an actual public list. Those on the list could be denied loans, grants, and other forms of government assistance. We have to understand, literally, there's been multiple examples of people who were unable to buy a plane ticket or a train ticket or travel because of their low social credit score. This is the future. This is where we are heading. As I pointed out, James Corbett has warned about for a very long time. And very clearly now, yes, this is step one, but this is on the track towards what China is currently doing. This is what they want to accomplish. And ask yourselves why they've kept it secret until now. Very interesting. Moving on to the next story coming from theantimedia.com, entitled, China says they won't be putting weapons in space anytime soon. I'm sorry, Russia says they won't be putting weapons in space anytime soon. Interesting article. Obviously off the title, people are going to be like, well, why should we trust Russia? And that's a fine question to ask. We shouldn't blanket trust anyone, including the United States government. But there's information within this that I find Very interesting, especially in regard to the concept of propaganda and how this is all being sold. Russian Deputy FM Sergei Rybakov told the Interfax news agency on Monday that the Russians have not put weapons in space and have no intention of putting any weapons in space. First, he says, saying that this is an important position the U.S. should not ignore. Now, we have to understand to a large degree this can be verified. There, outside of satellites, which you could argue may have something we don't know about, there have not put any weapons in space, nor has the U.S., verifiably, I should say. There's plenty of things that we cannot find out. But to date, that is true. But the point they're making is that we're not going to do it first, warning them, which is an important thing to take away there. The international community has long warned against the militarization of space. Talking about the space treaty, which again is one that I pointed out in relation to the treaties I discussed with Yemen, the United States is just choosing to break, saying we're just going to create a United States military space force because we think we have to create our control over the growing area, even though that's a direct contradiction of the space treaty to which they signed. Rybakov's comments appear to address U.S. pushes to establish a massive space force, as Trump called it himself, in the military, which they suggest is necessary to ensure dominance. U.S. officials have played up the idea of facing challenges in outer space that oblige them to launch such a buildup. Of course, always creating the justification for these actions without much evidence to back it up. Russian officials clearly intend to warn the U.S. away from this on the grounds that they haven't gone all in on space yet, but are prepared to respond if necessary. Most U.S. hype lately has centered around speculation of secret Russian weapons. Earlier this month, as we reported on, officials claimed a Russian satellite was behaving unusually, which doesn't really mean anything. It's simply a flimsy claim to say, look, that might be something. Let's start a space force. And evidence that it might be up to no good. There's no evidence that the inspector satellite has done anything wrong whatsoever. And this is a perfect example of what we're talking about here. Based on this concept, this flimsy idea of a Russian threat, this is something that's being pushed forward. When there's absolutely no evidence to support the idea that there's some kind of a race, but they're creating a space race for war. That's what's being built here. And Russia's willing to play the game if the United States pushes it forward. But this, and this seems to contradict the concept of actually de-escalating things. War is very clearly the agenda here when there's nothing currently taking place, but when you make this move, you're forcing them to respond. But again, this circle of logic coming back to the idea that they're claiming their move is because Russia's doing it first, which is not true. But the people who don't want to believe that, who are hyped up on this Russian fear, take that in stride and don't even double check it. No due diligence needed. Russia's the bad guy. That's what we've been taught. This is very scary. We have to begin to recognize the kind of propaganda we're talking about here and that they have the legal authority under the NDAA from 2013 to do just that. To create these fake stories, even if they in their mind think it's for some good, greater good idea, it's still a false story to manipulate you to move forward with an agenda that they think is best. And based on their history, the United States government specifically and the oligarchy controlling them, we should not trust a word they have to say. And nobody wants more war, especially not in space. So keep that in mind. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, entitled UK finally ditches moderate rebels ahead of Syrian army advance on Idlib. Very interesting story and very revealing. Very revealing with what's been going on there and in general to the perception around the idea of moderate rebels, to the idea of what's trying to be carried out in Syria. This is a very interesting story. So CNN warns, of course, that Syrian and Russian forces are closing in on the last rebel stronghold in Syria, while characteristically failing to inform its readers that the rebel coalition in control of the northwest pocket of Idlib is but the latest incarnation of al-Qaeda, calling itself Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. And again, I shouldn't have to point out that the Idlib area was where the last remnants of the White Helmets were pleading to be sent to, even though it is completely overcome by al-Qaeda. Interesting tie-in there, as we just pretend that's not the case. With the final major battle looming, which could mark the ultimate end of the final chapter to the war, the Western public is about to be subjected to a final end-all media onslaught of the last hospital, the last school, the last humanitarian rescuers, types of stories similar to how the media presented the battle for Aleppo in 2016. There's now even an Idlib version of Bana, which, interestingly enough, Sirianni Analysis did an entire video about and got immediately deleted. They censored him for discussing and pointing out the absurdity of a story like Bonna and the girl that they're talking about. She popped up on Twitter only a month ago. A six-year-old, Hala, supposedly set up an account on her own, excuse me, to publish awareness videos telling the world to keep their eyes on Idlib ahead of Assad's impending military campaign. Yet another young little girl creating her own account, speaking in perfect English, sharing nonsense propaganda that clearly projects the U.S. agenda. Bonna, being a perfect example, has been debunked so many times over by people like Eva Bartlett and Vanessa Bealey and many others. And Sirianni Analysis did a coverage of this, pointing out how absurd this was, and it was immediately deleted. Like, the video was gone before I could even share it, which says a lot. Now, however, there are some few outlets out there that have recently decided, which again is very insightful and shows us a lot that's changing around perception, to finally drop the worn-out transparent charade of moderate rebels, even though someone like Tulsi Gabbard has debunked that a long time ago, someone within Congress herself, and are now simply calling Hayat Tahrir al-Sham for what it is. Business Insider, for example, accurately labels them a terrorist group. In some of their recent headlines, it's called the Al-Qaeda affiliate, the next ISIS. And remember, this is the group that CNN is calling the rebel group supporting them. And yet someone in the same mainstream vein is now openly calling them a terrorist group. They seem to be fracturing here. And that's a success by the independent media for forcing them to cover the reality of the situation. But perhaps the greatest sign that the writing is on the wall for Syria's the latest rebel stronghold, to repeat CNN's words, there are new reports that Britain has cut off its longtime support to the moderate rebels that it has for years funded and armed along with the United States. On Monday, a UK government spokesperson confirmed the following, quote, "As the situation on the ground in some regions has become increasingly difficult, we have reduced support for some of our non-humanitarian programming," which is an interesting way to put that, "but continue to deliver vital support to help those most in need and to improve security and stability in the country," according to Reuters. Someone told me I said that wrong the other day, to Reuters. This is, in essence, the UK finally admitting its side has lost, which is a big step here, something that the United States seems to be unable to do, looking at something like Afghanistan. Despite them recently saying they're seeking peace, it's been a long dragging their feet effort in Afghanistan, same with Syria. But now this seems like the UK is essentially admitting a loss here. Though we should note its humanitarian funding will continue to flow to controversial groups like the White Helmets, who have long been proven to work in tandem with Al-Qaeda. Of course, some of them already probably being in Idlib to potentially carry out something we've been warning about for a long time. But it's interesting to see this evolution of the propaganda, as someone like CNN is still calling them the rebels, while openly the Business Times and other mainstream media are now calling them what they are. This is a fracture in their propaganda, but we have to realize this for what it is, propaganda. There are groups that are actively trying to progress the agendas of the Western powers, the United States oligarchy specifically, and we are beginning to see through it. So we need to continue our efforts here. And this has to be more evident than ever that this is what's trying to be accomplished. We cannot have a short memory anymore. We have to remember the past and how it relates to what's going on today. We just talked about Iran. We're seeing the very same things. This has been the agenda for a very long time. And we have to pay attention to this. Now, I want to finish today with some examples of how this Russian propaganda is being used. Of course, coming into the concept of the upcoming elections. But this propaganda, we have to be able to call this for what it is. There's a recent article that just came out that's being discussed by many. Russian hackers targeted U.S. Senate think tanks, according to Microsoft says, of course. Always with any of these articles, there's really no evidence to support it. There's claims backed by people that many would say, oh, well, we trust them. They're reputable. We can trust that. But, of course, the evidence is always classified. You never get to see it. It's classified. National security. But just trust us. This is happening. It could be happening, right? Anything's possible. Maybe it even is. Russian hackers are probably doing the same thing that United States hackers are doing to them. But is there evidence to support it? We don't get to see it. This is baseless claims. And of course, this comes out right before the midterm elections. Just as we recently talked about Bolton doing the same thing. China, North Korea, Iran, anybody that we don't like, they're possibly going to hack us coming up. He's basically said that. And we have to be aware of what this really is meant to do. Ben Swan just came out with a great video, "Have Russians Hacked Florida Voting Machines?" Which is funny that he even feels the need to ask that question. With there's zero evidence to date to support any of the previous Russian hacking claims. Everything they have is rooted in the concept that our intelligence community says so, or that they bought Facebook ads after the election, and even verifiably by many of their own words, did not influence anything. As he points out in this video, despite all of that, many of people on this one side of the left-right paradigm actually think that they influenced the election, despite the fact that no one's even made that claim or proved that claim. And he points out in this video that this coming from Senator Bill Nelson, he's basically making the open, blatant claim that Russian hackers may cause chaos, actually saying erasing people from the voter polls. Where is he getting this from? He says, quote, "That's exactly what the Russians want to do. They want to sow chaos in our democratic institutions, despite the fact that we don't have democratic institutions. Maybe they want to spread chaos, but where's the evidence? Oh, that's right. It's classified." Now, wouldn't you think that they really wanted to convince people this was happening, that they would share something, anything that verified these claims? No, this is propaganda. And remember, like I said, they have the legal right in their mind, based on their faulty laws they put in place, the legal authority to literally create fake news to progress what they see as their national interests. That's not hyper, that's not a fake idea. That is a real, embedded in the 2013 National Defense Authorization Act, to create propaganda for the purposes of national security. Point I always say, so that story you saw last night on CNN, Fox News, that could be completely fabricated, in their eyes, be completely legal. That is a horrifying thought to realize. This is exactly what the Russians want to do. No evidence to support that whatsoever. And the final story, based on the one coming from Microsoft, literally because of what Microsoft claims, with evidence we don't get to see, now we're seeing the Treasury unloads on Moscow, as the title says. Washington freezes Russians' assets in the U.S. worth hundreds of millions of dollars, based simply on the claims according to Microsoft. This is an escalation for nothing other than escalation, to create the air of uncertainty around the midterm election, so that anything that happens, they can say, well, this is why. Oh, I lost? Well, it's not justified because the Russians hacked the election. They're setting this up. This is propaganda in this purest form. As I've said, doesn't mean that Russia could not be influencing something. Of course not. Of course they could. It's just as likely as the U.S., which we know is currently happening all around the world, in elections all around the world, constantly. That's what they do. They've admitted it on actual television. But of course, when they maybe even do it back with no evidence, well, that's just the end of the world. That can't be allowed. And maybe it shouldn't be allowed, but is it happening? We don't know. We don't have any evidence. But yet we're already seeing this, just like we saw them react to the fake evidence in Syria, the fake evidence from the Novichok, all these things being debunked and still acting anyway. Because it's not about evidence. It's not about proving anything. The reality is that they're using these things to manipulate your perception. That has to get through to us. We have to begin to recognize that. That's what's really going on here. And until we can see that, nothing's really going to change. So really take this stuff in today and stand back and recognize what we're talking about when we mean propaganda, social engineering, social programming. These things have been embedded in our kids that are growing up today are going to grow into this concept that the boogeyman, Russia, Syria, Iran, these are the evil enemies of the United States. And we have to make sure that we fight this narrative with truth. Just like we were called fake news for what's happening in Yemen, and now we're vindicated, but they're still oppressing the story, or they're suppressing the story. So we need to continue to fight. We need to continue to push this stuff out. As always, thank you for tuning in today. To stay tuned on this very channel, we're going to continue the discussion, our TLAV research and review. And as always, check out all the show notes below, all the independent sources, and question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.